KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. One of the most hard-fought elections in Washington State this year is for the 1st Congressional District. That's the seat that Jay Inslee held until he stepped down to run for governor. The 1st was once a Democratic stronghold, but the boundaries were redrawn this year. Now it's considered a swing district, closely divided between Democrats and Republicans. And voters in the 1st have a clear choice this year. Republican John Koster is in his third term in the Snohomish County Council. He served three terms in the state legislature, where he co-founded the Conservative Caucus. He ran against and lost twice for Rick Larson in the 2nd Congressional District. Susan DelBene lost a previous race against Dave Reichert in the 8th District. She's Washington State Revenue Director, but her background is business. She did a couple tours at Microsoft and in between ran a couple of tech startups. She's spending big to win this one. She donated $500,000 to her campaign this week, making her total personal spending $2.8 million. Thanks to both of you for coming by. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Ross.
Thank you.
Susan DelBene, I got to ask you, is it a fair system where wealthy candidates can kind of self-fund their elections?
I think that, you know, just like any startup, if I'm asking people to invest in this, that I have to do my part. And so it's been important for me to do my part in this election and make sure we get information out with voters so that they know the clear choice they do have in this race and can make the decision for who they think is going to be the best candidate.
John Koster, do you think it's a fair system, or should the federal government restrict wealthy people from contributing to their election campaigns?
You're talking to a guy who believes in smaller government, not bigger government.
So that's a no?
Yeah, well, it's a no, I think, as long as people know. As long as there's full disclosure, but you know, it definitely gives Susan an advantage to us. We've been outspent about 5-1, but you know, we've got a great ground game out there. Lots of people ringing doorbells, and you know, making phone calls. And you know, there's one thing to remember: there were 13 self-funders that ran in 2010. Three got elected.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to dwell on the campaign ads, but there are some tough campaign ads out there, and probably that's the way a lot of people are formulating their opinions of you. Do you think there's anything out of bounds, Susan DelBene?
Yeah, I think right now that there are a lot of baseless accusations that Mr. Koster's campaign has made against me. For instance. Well, he's talked about me doling out political favors at the Department of Revenue, and that is absolutely false, and there's no data behind that, and it's just disappointing that that is what the campaign has come to in terms of mudslinging there. And he's even had folks out by my house taking pictures so that he can put them up on the web and in his ads. And, you know, that's my family home where I live, and as a mother, I find it to be definitely crossing the line, and it is creepy. And we have important issues that we face in this country right now. The conversation needs to be about what we're going to do to help working families and the middle class, not about making up stories and campaigns.
And I want to get to those issues, but I want to give you a chance, John Koster. Do you think there's anything that's been out of bounds in the political ads we've seen in this campaign?
Well, there's not enough time in the next 17 minutes or so to go through them all, so I'll keep it brief. I've been accused of wanting to ban contributions or contraceptives and make them illegal. That's wholly false. The idea that I want to privatize Social Security is untrue, and that I want to end Medicare is just untrue. So there's plenty of it.
John Koster, you've said that the biggest difference between you and your opponent, Susan DelBene, is that you want small government, as you just alluded to. You opposed the Obama stimulus package. You say that's one example of where government shouldn't have done that. I was just looking at the website. Washington State got $6.5 billion of money from the Obama stimulus package, including a lot of money for Snohomish County that you represent. How has that money been spent there?
Well, you know, we did a lot of things that we would have done anyhow at the county, a lot of projects that were on the books. We moved them forward, so we moved some of those projects up. But I think the bottom line is this. It was supposed to create jobs. Show me the jobs. There are no sustained jobs or very few that you can point to out of the stimulus package. You get over $800 billion out for stimulus, and where are the jobs?
Susan DelBene, what do you think about the stimulus plan? Do you think it has done what it was set out to do?
I think that it's important that we invest in infrastructure and education and the things that are going to build long-term economic foundation for our country. And we need to look at things in the long term. So investments we make today in fixing a pothole actually save us money in the long term because we don't have to fix a bigger problem in a road or a bridge. And we need to move cargo and people around. And so having a strong transportation system is incredibly important. And investments make there there that we make there pay off for us in the long run.
Well, what about the investments made by the federal stimulus program?
Some
Did they accomplish those things?
Those investments in terms of roads, et cetera, are things that we're being able to take advantage of today. But going forward, as we look at our budget, we need a balanced approach, and we need to make sure that we target investments that give us great results and give taxpayers a great return, and infrastructure is one of those areas.
And your opponent says the stimulus really didn't do much to create jobs. Do you agree with him?
Well, my
that?
Opponent has more of a slash and burn mentality when it comes to the budget, and I do think that we need a balanced approach, that we need folks to come together across the aisle, and that there are places that we need to reform our taxes, there are spending cuts that we need to make, and there's also investments we need to make, and that's going to build the foundation for economic growth. And that's what we need to focus on today, because right now, businesses, small businesses in particular, are waiting to see what the playing field is going to look like going forward, what our financial situation is going to be like as a country, and Congress isn't moving.
Your opponent says the key difference between the two of you is he's small government, and I guess that would mean that you're big government. Do you think that's the biggest difference?
I think it's about smart government. I think it's making investments where we need to make investments. I think it's about making sure we streamline government. And, you know, my opponent has been about extreme positions on policy and not voting for bipartisan solutions. He voted against 5 out of the 6 bipartisan budgets that came up when he was in the state legislature. And what we need is bipartisanship and people focused on results. And I believe, you know, I've been a small business person, a large business person. I think my background really brings to the table a lot of experience in the economy that we need in Congress to help get real solutions and results in place.
John Costa, you've called for eliminating entire federal departments if you're elected to Congress. Which ones and why?
Well, eliminating federal departments. I don't know where that came from. I know my opponent accuses me of that. I believe that we could reduce significantly federal departments. I believe that the Federal Department of Education could be shrunk down to an administrative level. I think the federal mandates to our schools add more cost. I mean, No Child Left Behind didn't work out so well. So I think that the education of our children is best handled at the local levels. If we really got into significant tax reform and you did a fair tax or a flat tax, as some have advocated for, if you had a fair tax, you probably wouldn't need a Department of Internal Revenue Service. They wouldn't be necessary at that point. But I'm also a realist, and we're not going to get there with a flat tax or a fair tax. I think we do need comprehensive tax reform, but that's not probably in the cards. But the thing that we have had to do at the local government and at the state government is actually balance budgets, and that's something my opponent knows nothing about.
Knows nothing about.
I've been a business person. I've been a small business person. I've worked in large business. I absolutely had to balance budget, and that has been my experience. And so it's really when we look at the history here, and I want to point out that Mr. Koster did say that he would eliminate the Department of Education and the Federal Reserve. That's something that came up in the last election cycle. We need to have a balanced approach. We need people who are going to go to Congress and understand that our investments and putting together kind of the plan for our country, we need to have smart financial solutions.
Okay, we've got a kind of a factual question here. I had read in some material that you were calling for elimination of federal departments. You just said you didn't. Is that incorrect?
Well, you could eliminate the Federal Reserve if you wanted to do a fair tax, but the reality of it is you'll never get to a fair tax.
Right.
But I can tell you one thing. It's easier for me to explain why I voted against legislative budgets than it is for my opponent to explain why she voted for, well, she failed to vote in 9 elections before her own name was on the ballot in 2008.
I take responsibility for my voting record. I should have become an absentee voter earlier, and I did miss some votes, and that was a mistake of my past and not a mistake of my present or my future. The disappointing thing is, and I take responsibility for that, the disappointing thing about that is my opponent also missed voting in elections when he was in the state legislature. And so he does not have a perfect voting record either. And it's important that, we are honest and take responsibility.
I want to go back to some of the key issues here. John Costa, you've said that you have a 100% pro-life voting record. Do you oppose the death penalty?
No.
You think that's not a pro-life thing stand to be against?
I think there's a big difference between an unborn child and the murderer.
You also have said that you oppose abortion with no exceptions for rape or for incest. Why do you think it should be illegal for a woman to get an abortion if they are a victim of rape or incest?
Well, it's not illegal. The fact of the matter, it is. Those are my personal beliefs, and like you and like Susan, you were entitled to our personal beliefs. It's legal. I take an oath of office to uphold the law and the Constitution, and I have done that. I don't intend to throw anybody in jail for doing something that's totally legal. My own personal beliefs are my personal beliefs.
But you'll be a lawmaker. You'll be able to change.
Well, the fact of the matter is, let's look at what's going on in the United States today. There are 39% of women are losing sleep out there. They're not losing sleep because of my personal belief system. They're losing sleep because they go to the gas station and gas is $4 a gallon. Or they go to the grocery store and think they're going to be able to buy a cartload of groceries for $50 instead of they end up paying $75. Or their house, they're underwater in their mortgage, or they've lost their homes. Or their kids graduated from school in June and they're still living at home because they can't find a job. Economic issues. This campaign, my campaign has been about the economy, about jobs, how we get this economy back on track, about how we create the opportunity for young people to live the American dream. I haven't been bringing up whether we're going to ban contraceptives or these kinds of things my opponent has brought up. We've been focused on this economy. That's what we've been focused on, and I don't see anything in the foreseeable future where there's going to be a vote based on banning contributions or abortion. We've got to get this. $500 billion worth of taxes go into effect January 1st. Sequestration on January 2nd. Do you think this is an issue?
I want to get to that because, of course, that was what whoever wins is going to really face
that's
in January.
Right.
But I do want to give you a chance, Susan DelBene, to talk about your stand on abortion.
Well, I am 100% pro-choice, and I think that this is a huge issue. Look nationally right now. We've been having a conversation about this, and Republican candidates across our country have been making statements really very demeaning statements, trying to redefine rape. And this is part of the Republican Party that Mr. Koster represents. And he would be a lawmaker, and he has been clear on his positions. And laws will come up, and you have to vote on those laws. And so it's incredibly important that we have someone who's going to stand up for women's rights, who's going to let women make the decisions between that they need to make with their doctors, but also that we stand up for things like equal pay and other forms of equal rights. And this is a place, marriage equality. These are all things that have come up at the local level, the national level, and it is an important part of the conversation. And it's even part of the economic conversation when we talk about equal pay and when we talk about health care.
Neither of you are going to get a chance to vote on this, but by the end of the year, we're headed toward what's called the fiscal cliff. There'll be automatic budget cuts that'll be going into place, and there will be an automatic elimination of some of the Bush-era tax cuts, as if expected, nothing is done by the end of the year. Susan DelBene, if you take off office in January and you face the situation, which many say is going to drive the economy back into a recession, what will you do?
Well, one of us will probably take office before then, because we have also have a special election going
That's right.
on here. So someone will be serving probably during the lame duck session. I absolutely think we need a balanced approach. I think that Congress has only been passing continuing resolutions and short-term bills, and we need visibility into the future, and our economy needs that visibility. Business needs that visibility.
What does that
Boeing
mean?
And Boeing and Microsoft and many businesses today came out and said that they want to see a balanced approach come out.
What's that mean, balanced approach?
It means
you?
We have to look at taxes. I support letting the Bush tax cuts expire for higher wage earners. It means that we have to look at the loopholes that we have out there and get rid of loopholes and subsidies and things that aren't performing for us today and helping our economy. One example are subsidies that we give to oil companies. They're highly profitable companies. They're doing fine. They don't need government support. And so we need to make sure that we get our tax policy in place and correct, and that we look at where we're spending and make sure we spend on things that are critical and give us a long-term return, and also make sure we stop spending where we're not getting the return that we need for our country.
Okay, I think we're going to hear a difference here also. If you are elected John Koster and in the lame duck session and then continuing in Congress, what do you think we need to do to deal with the fiscal cliff?
I think, well, number one, you've got to put some people around the table who actually want to solve this problem and who aren't going to run back and polarize to their party position and be more concerned about getting reelected than they are about doing the right things. I think that's the place you start to begin with. And as far as a policy, I think we do need comprehensive tax reform. I think we need to re-up the Bush tax cuts. My opponent wants to cut it off at $250,000, but I think that just demonstrates her lack of understanding of the tax code and what it does to S-corps and individuals, sole proprietors, and how they pay their taxes. I mean, they're just, in her opinion, collateral damage in just letting these taxes, cutting this off at $250,000. But it needs to be part of a greater discussion. She brings up the Buffett rule, and that's, you know, that raises $50 billion in 10 years. That's enough. That's $5 billion a year. That's enough to run the federal government for a couple of days. So you've got to put this all on the table and try to do comprehensive tax reform that makes sense. Lower the corporate rates. Bring that money back to this country. See the investments in the job creation. Broaden the base. That's just one thing that needs to happen. Obviously, we need to prioritize our spending. We need to make the right investments in the right way for the right reasons, both short-term and long-term. So, but the point is this. We need people to sit around this table who can work with others across the aisle.
Well, how do we know you can?
I've done it. I spent three terms in the state legislature, and we passed welfare reform, health care reform, regulatory reform. We rolled back $1.2 billion in taxes, and we balanced the state budget. In fact, when I left the legislature, we left with a surplus in the state budget. We did this with a strong Republican majority in the House, and Democrats in the Senate, and Democrat governor.
And you voted against five out of the six budgets.
And that's easy enough to explain if I'm allowed to do that.
You did not vote for those budgets at all. And so you can't say you're bipartisan when you only vote no.
It's a difference in passing legislation.
People come together, and right now we have a Congress where people are only voting no, and they're not getting things done.
We're just about out of time, but I got to ask you one thing. I mean, as people have heard, you clearly are diametrically opposed on a lot of issues. If they can't see the difference, then they're not paying that much attention. You have totally different philosophies of government. And yet this is an incredibly close race. I mean, does your division between your views kind of indicate that the people of the first district are equally divided? Why do you think it's so close when you present clear choices?
I actually think there are a lot of independent voters out there. I think people really want to understand what the differences are, but they do want someone who has the experience to get things done. And I actually think there is a clear choice, and I think that people want folks who have a history of getting things done and results as opposed to extreme partisanship like my opponent. So I think we'll have a very successful campaign.
John Koster?
Well, I think the district is evenly divided and it's very, very diverse. And that's the first place you got to start representing, understanding you represent people from very diverse backgrounds. I do have the experience. We have done a lot of things bipartisan. I've got 6 years in the legislature, 11 years on the county council. 95% of our votes in the county council are unanimous vote. My opponent has zero, absolutely zero political experience.
John Koster and Susan DelBene, the candidates in the 1st Congressional District. There's a lot more to learn about this race. You've probably got the voter's guide sitting on your table. Pull it out, read it, check out their websites, find out more about these two candidates so you make an informed choice in the upcoming election. Thanks to both of you for being here. We really appreciate it. Our program produced by David Hyde and Arwin Nix, and we also got Andy Hurst helping us out as the engineer on this from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.